RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and it is the Fun Friday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with...
Thank God it's Friday, Val, and...
Beans.
It's going to be a good one.
Oh, yes. We got to talk to Dr. Carlin Borisenko.
What is her Twitter again?
It is, I will tell you. Oh, goodness. It is at... They're not letting it pull up figures. It is at Dr. K-A-R-L-Y-N-B. It's at D-R-K-A-R-L-Y-N-B.
That's why I couldn't find it. K, not C.
K.
And Y. Okay. All right. Yeah. That's why I couldn't find anything.
Yeah. You couldn't find it. So she's the one who wrote that piece from New Hampshire about the fact that Donald Trump was going to win in 2020. She's kind of like a walkaway story. Wasn't that great? It was a great conversation.
I had so much fun. It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure meeting her and talking to her and hearing her thoughts. And I wish her experience for so many people.
Yes.
I wish that experience for so many people. Because it would just make such a nicer place to live. Not a politically monolithic place. It would just be it would create a reasonable nation.
I craved that conversation with somebody who really doesn't completely agree with you on everything. Like, we didn't even get into it. And I was like, oh, we're talking and having a conversation with somebody who doesn't agree with us. Like,
yeah,
it's been so long since I've debated anybody on anything.
And the best thing was, is it's not a debate. It's just a dialectic. You're exchanging ideas and you're not looking to score points. And when it's not, debate is pretty much a sport. It's a verbal sport.
Yes.
And you're trying to win. You're going into the later innings. You got a lead. But this is not it. And if we do this, oh boy, a lot of people are going to hate that on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. We'll have our interview with her. You'll listen to it in a second. She is now an Uncover DC contributor. I am so blessed to have her. She's going to bring so much to what we do. So exciting. She writes for Forbes. Pretty amazing. Love her. She's my new best friend. Here she is. Good morning.
Good morning.
So,
hey, Carlin.
Hi.
So you like shot to the stratosphere out of nowhere. Like, you were just one day doing your thing and the next day you were everywhere.
Yeah, it was a little insane. And the funniest thing that people don't know is I almost didn't even write that article. I really wasn't going to. I kind of thought, I was like, oh no, this is not my lane. I don't write about politics stuff online. And then I just couldn't focus on my work until I got it out of my system. So I just went on Medium, wrote the thing in about 20 minutes, threw it up. Never thought anything would come of it, but surprise.
So, yeah, surprise is right. So give us a little bit of a background about you. Like, I want people to hear your story in like kind of like a longer form. So you take the floor. Yeah. Start from like, I don't know, I guess explain the whole knitting thing for everyone, because that is something that has come up on this show before. No, seriously. Go ahead.
Yeah. So about a year ago, what started happening in the knitting community was that this band of people, I've called them roving gangs of social justice warriors, and people laugh, but it's actually the truth. They just started going around the knitting community, calling people out for these absurd infractions. And the first thing that happened was a woman who makes these really popular knitting bags got called out for this blog post that she wrote about being so excited to go on this trip to India. And she would, always wanted to go to India, and she was always scared of traveling, so she never made it happen. And it just seemed like a foreign place. And oh my God, wasn't this wonderful? And then she got attacked for othering people in India and was forced to write this big, long point by point apology for her blog post.
Othering? What is othering? I've never heard of it.
They said that like she's colonizing, or like, treating them like, aliens or oh, what wow. have you. Yeah.
It was a new word. You have to get up with things, Robin. There are new words invented every day.
Yeah.
It's like a whole new vocabulary.
Oh, yes.
So she had to write this big point by point apology, and that really emboldened them. So then they went on, and so when Maria Tuscan, who is a dyer of just really beautiful yarn, she saw this happening, and all she did was post a video blog saying, "I don't like all the bullying that's going on Instagram, and I'm going to leave for a little while." And they mobbed her horribly, and Maria describes it as she became the most hated person in the knitting community after that. They destroyed her business. They went after partnerships that she had built up with very popular designers. I mean, it was really bad. And then in the midst of all that, this guy Nathan, Sockmatician, posted on this hashtag that he created called Diverse Knitty. All he did was post a poem asking for kindness. And I mean, the retribution he got, he was called out for tone policing. And we're talking like hundreds, if not even thousands of people mobbing him incessantly. And it got so bad for him that he actually had a nervous breakdown and went into the hospital on suicide watch.
Holy moly. Okay.
That's one I haven't even heard of yet. Tone policing. This is the first time I'm hearing this. Tone policing.
Wow. Okay. So you're watching this as somebody on the left.
Yes. Right?
And yeah. You're saying to yourself, what at that point? Because if I saw this going on, and I'm on the right, if I saw this going on anywhere, I would be aghast immediately. Mm-hmm. What did you say to yourself? Like, what was your thought process?
So it was weird to be in it because in the midst of all this stuff that was happening to Nathan, all these very, very well-known designers started denouncing him. And the message that I originally heard was that he was being denounced because he attacked a black woman at a knitting event. And so that was what I heard. And I was like, listen, if he actually physically attacks someone, then he kind of probably deserves it a little bit. I thought it was excessive and I thought it was just way too much. But I was like, I can kind of understand it. But then it came out later that was completely made up. That never happened. He didn't attack anyone. In fact, she was probably the aggressor in the situation, and he was completely set up by the people running the event. And so when the truth kind of came out about that, I took a step back and I said, this is just wrong, and people need to start speaking up about it. And I don't make my money from knitting, whereas a lot of the people in the community do. And so, and I had also done my doctoral dissertation about workplace bullying, so I know bullying when I see it. And all I did was post on Instagram the definition of the word bullying, and oh my God, I was called a Nazi, a racist, a white supremacist. I had all these horrible lies spread about me. Now, I didn't get it nearly as bad as some of the other folks, but that was really my wake up call to say these people are not all there. And it really started to make me question everything about what I perceived in my reality.
Wow. Wow.
And good on you for being able to do that, because that alone is an amazing feat these days, because most people will just wonder what they did wrong and ask for forgiveness and fall back in line. And I got to say, listening to this, Tracy, this is the reason why whenever I drive around and I see the bumper stickers that says hate has no home here, I roll my eyes. Mm-hmm. It's just like to live in a version, to live in a timeline where you know that even they've ruined denouncing hate. They've ruined the act of denouncing hate because you know where they're coming from and how skewed they are and ridiculous they are. It's so mind-boggling.
Yeah.
What did you do next? What was the first thing you started digging into to see if you'd been lied to? What's the first thing?
So At that point, I started really making proactive efforts to break out of this liberal echo chamber that I'd gotten myself into, because I was, I was focused on building two different businesses and doing things in my life. And I just wasn't paying attention to all the things in the news. But MSNBC was on in my house constantly, and all of my friends were very liberal. So that was just where I was at. And so I started making proactive efforts to listen to voices that I really thought I would disagree with, just to see. And I started with Ben Shapiro, because Ben Shapiro... in my mind, was Satan, right? Even though I had never listened to him. And, you know, what I discovered is that he's really not Satan, and he's very smart and he's very funny. And there are things that I absolutely disagree with him on, but there are things that I also agree with him on. And once I discovered that, it was just like the floodgates opened. And I just you really started doing my research and listening to all these different people. And I started to realize how much I had been lied to by the people around me.
So I was talking to my one of my family members about this, and I was like, imagine, because this happened to me, but it happened to me about 20 years ago. So I don't really remember what it felt like to, I kind of do, but what does it feel like to realize that you have formed worldviews and opinions of people based on complete fabrications from the institutions that we're supposed to be able to trust?
You know, I think the first thing that I really felt was honestly like a lot of shame and guilt for some of the things that I said. I mean, I absolutely believe that all this led to me having Trump derangement syndrome, which I never thought was a real thing. But once I was on the outside, I was able to kind of look back and say, what were you thinking? Like, what was going through your head when you said, because I said some horrible things to people. And so that was really the first thing. But it was just then, it was like, I'm living in the upside down. I don't, like, you have to really research every single thing to make sure that you have a correct sense of what the truth was in that situation.
And that's a long process, given the amount of things that we've experienced, not even just on a cultural level, which is where I think that you started your kind of journey more, but on a political level, especially in as an investigative journalist. And Frank and I talk about this all the time. The entire Spygate scandal, the whole Russia thing, what really actually happened there, you know, how far have you gotten in just
I don't know that I've gotten that far. I've gotten, you know, and part of it's too is that I have to kind of pick my battles at this point about what I want to go and research. I think one of the things that really stood out to me is this was all kind of happening as the impeachment nonsense was winding up. And I had been very much in favor of impeachment for a while, but then I started looking at what they were doing and I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. If he's really guilty of all these heinous crimes and there's all this evidence, then why aren't they actually charging him with a crime? Mm-hmm. I don't understand that.
You see, yeah, and this is what time is the trap, Carlin. Time is the trap. And once you put your time in, most people, it's just we all know this from petty grudges we've had in middle school, where the longer you're mad at somebody, you can't go back. You know, there's been 3 years of Vladimir Putin jokes that people have been saying and ribbing each other on Facebook. It's very hard. It's impossible for some people to even consider that they might have been lied to this entire time, no matter what the issue may be. I just used Vladimir Putin as an example. But time is the trap. They get you to invest time, and then our human nature kicks in and you don't even want to consider that you've been wasting it.
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely confirmation bias in action. It's people only looking for information that confirms that Trump is like the most horrible person ever in the history of the world. And, you know, I think for me, too, it was just a lot of people really asking me very pointed questions to say, what rights have you lost during the Trump presidency? And I have to say, well, none. I have every single liberty that I had the minute he was elected. And so he's probably not an evil dictator. He's definitely not Hitler. I mean, this is just crazy.
So it comes primary time in New Hampshire, a very important state, as we know. And you are exploring your candidates on the left to see who it is going to ultimately get your vote. What are you looking for as a person who is a liberal? What are you looking for in a candidate that you do find or don't find?
Yeah. So, I mean, New Hampshire, we're very spoiled. And so I got to see every single major Democratic candidate at one point or another. And what I was really looking for is I've always been pretty centrist. I mean, on my political compass test, if you look at it, I'm literally dead on the line between right and left and with libertarian leanings. Mm-hmm. So I was really looking for someone that was just going to come in with a good centrist point of view, that wasn't going to do anything crazy, that maybe was going to fix health care. My biggest concern at the beginning was, could they beat Donald Trump? Were they electable? But I was also I didn't want to go off the rails on a totally progressive left-wing candidate either, because that doesn't make sense to me. So that's kind of what I was looking for.
When you say fix healthcare, what's broken?
I mean, this is where I still hold some very liberal tendencies, in that I fundamentally believe that in the wealthiest country in the world, people should not be going bankrupt because they get sick. And I think that there's still, I mean, I think Obamacare was a good start, but I think that we could continue to iterate and build on that and to create a system that could help more people with coverage.
Oh my gosh, Frank, we're going to have so much fun when she comes back on and we can actually talk about issues with someone who disagrees with us.
Yes.
No,
yes,
because we miss
it. I just thought of an entire curriculum for this guy, right there. I was like, yes, no, that's great. It's great to have these. See, this is what I know that we're getting off the rails just a little bit. I want to get back to her story, but for me, it's really just one of those things where I see where how leftism is devolving and always does in every society. The first thing it does is it hijacks compassionate people and true altruism, people who want to do good and they got good hearts.
Yep.
And it's the big thing that we've lost is our connection to civics, as we always talk about. And what this balance, how you can balance out compassion, voluntary action, love of your neighbor, and federalism. How to break things apart so that centralization of power never happens. Because that's where all this fear comes from. Because every 4 years, you're worried that Hitler might take over every aspect of your life. It shouldn't be that way. It should be something where in New Hampshire, they're talking about how can we provide a safety net for people in New Hampshire, so their medical needs, if they're in need, if they're poor, elderly, sick, disabled, we can do something for people in New Hampshire, because that might be sustainable in a state that size with communities that size, and you know what can work for you because you live there. But to have somebody in California tell you how you have to live in Maine is wrong on so many levels. And that's where we have problems morally and financially, and that's where we get away from what is really American about our experimental system of government here, self-government. So I think that's where we're getting closer and closer. As long as people are starting to see the scam and how they control the way we process reality, then we're only a few steps away from having these more helpful conversations.
Go ahead.
And I was just going to say, I mean, and I don't necessarily disagree with anything you just said. And I think the fundamental thing is that we need to start having conversation and yes. looking for ways to compromise.
Yes.
Yes. And that's why I'm so excited you're going to be writing for Uncover DC, because I crave so badly this conversation with somebody who disagrees with me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's gone. It doesn't happen anymore. I can't learn anything from you, from people like you. I can't learn what you care about or what makes you feel good, or you know what I mean? There's no more humanism anymore. It's just either you think this way or you think that way. And if you think that way, we hate your guts and we want you dead, you know? And from my perspective, it's like, I just want to talk to you, for goodness sakes, like about this important issue.
Right. And that's why I was so grateful to revisit the walkaway campaign, which happened when I was kind of breaking out of my echo chamber, because I had thought that walkaway was like fake and Russian bots and all this stuff, because that's what MSNBC told me. Right. But when I rediscovered it and found people in the community that were real live human beings, it was the first time in years for me that I was able to have conversation with people. And sometimes we agreed and sometimes we disagreed, but it was such an intellectually invigorating experience. And it was like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got way off kilter here because we love talking to you. But you were going to the primary. You were going to see all the candidates. You were looking for a centrist, more kind of like middle of the road candidate. What did you end up thinking about, if you don't mind sharing? What did you think about these guys and girls?
I thought that I ended up ultimately voting for Pete Buttigieg in the New Hampshire primary because I still had to vote as a Democrat. I hadn't left the party yet. And I thought that he was smart. I thought that he listened to people from different sides. I actually watched him in different panels he did, where he took so many notes from people who had different points of views and stuff like that. And that was something that made me gravitate towards him. I thought he was someone that wouldn't make any big rash decisions. And so that's why I ultimately voted for him. I mean, when you think about like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, like they were just going completely off the rails and just like pandering so much to this like woke PC thing that I couldn't even handle it. And like, I grew up in Vermont. I have loved Bernie Sanders my entire life. I have literally never known a time without Bernie Sanders in it. And I had always respected his consistency and his passion. And I voted for him in 2016. And he's lost it in the past 4 years. I don't know what happened to him. And then there were like all these really good centrist candidates, like, you know, Michael Bennett or what's his name from Montana, the governor of Steve Bullock. And they just didn't get any traction. Or even like Tulsi Gabbard, who I kind of came to late. She just like didn't get any traction here. And it was really disappointing to see that people were gravitating so much to the far left candidates and not really looking at more of the more sensible ones.
Do you think that it's that they didn't get any traction, or maybe you haven't gotten to see what the DNC did in 2016 to Bernie Sanders yet, but do you think that this is an engineered field?
Well, I have actually seen what the DNC did to Bernie Sanders, and that's like a whole other thing that I'm upset about. But no, I mean, it's when you go to events in New Hampshire, you can see who's kind of pulling in people and who's not. And there's a lot of opportunity to create grassroots campaigns in New Hampshire because people are so open to it and they're so excited just to hear from everyone. And so it was just that they were not resonating with people. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't really understand why. But when you go to these events and you talk to people, it's like and these are Democrats that have been Democrats for a long time, they're not interested in compromise. They're not interested in discussion. And I think that's what makes people like Bernie Sanders and Liz Warren so much more attractive to them.
So are these people like, what are their age ranges of some of the folks that you saw? Was it older folks and younger kids, or what was it like?
It's really all over the spectrum. I would say it probably leans a little bit older, but they really the entire gamut.
So New Hampshire is interesting because it's a state that we focus on as well, very, very closely, you know, live free or die. Right. So New Hampshire is one of the freest states in the country, which is an interesting kind of. Right, Frank?
You remember it was either in, I don't know, it might have been around the time 2008, it was probably around 2008. Where there was actually a lot of press generated, at least in certain circles, that people were libertarians were trying to encourage each other to go and move
to the Free State Project.
New Hampshire. Yeah. Yep. They wanted to move to New Hampshire and at least start building a critical mass of representation inside of an already very libertarian kind of a state. And that was the target location. Everybody wanted to move there and make a life.
Yep. It was called the Free State Project, and a lot of people moved there. A lot. And, you know, New Hampshire is one of the freest states that exists in the union. So it's so interesting to me to see this kind of socialist bent from some of the people that live there. It's weird. It's like that will all go away. All of it. Do you think people realize that?
Oh, I don't think people have any idea. I really don't. I think the appeal of all the free things is strong.
Wow. Okay. So you saw all those guys, and then you said to yourself, what exactly went through your head when you said you were going to go see President Trump at a rally?
You know, well, it was kind of like I kind of viewed it as like a graduation exercise, right? It was like the culmination of me listening to all these voices I disagreed with. And, you know, what better way to see how much I've changed and broken out of my echo chamber than to go to a Trump rally of all things? And I mean, when am I ever going to have that opportunity again? So I decided to go, and I was back and forth about it in my head. I was like, do you really want to do this? Up until I decided to leave my house a couple hours before. And I was nervous. I'm going to be honest. I really didn't know what to expect out of it. And plus, anyone who I had told that I was going to this rally, they were genuinely afraid for my safety. They were like, Carlin, don't do it. You're going to be harassed. You're going to be hurt. They're going to be.
How would anybody have known at the Trump rally? How would anybody have known to harass you? Like, do they think that we just like look at people that have a certain smile and then we know that they're, I mean, I don't get that.
Well, I have this hat that I wear around sometimes that looks like a Trump hat, but it's red and it says "Make Speech Free Again." Mm. And It's a weird hat because I originally bought it as my little protest to cancel culture and how much I absolutely detest it. But it's completely open to interpretation. So when I'm around left-leaning people, they think I'm talking about the right. When I'm around right-leaning people, they think I'm talking about the left. And so when my liberal friends knew I was going to wear this hat to the Trump rally, they really thought I was going to be harassed purely because of the hat.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you get there.
Yeah.
You get online. What are you experiencing?
The line was so long. And so you have a couple hours to kind of wait and chat with people. And so you just strike up conversations and find that these are just normal, everyday people. They're not scary. They're not Nazis. They're not white supremacists. I was not harassed one minute. I even let it slip sometimes that I'm a Democrat. And they were like, oh, my God, welcome. Good for you. And they were really excited to have me there. And so it was a wonderful experience. And they were a really welcoming crowd. And I had a great time.
So that's awesome. As a Trump supporter, I have attended rallies before. And the thing that I've taken away is that people are not excited at the rallies because they worship the president, but they're excited for the future of the country underneath a president who represents them. Did you take that vibe away from there when you feel the energy in that room?
Yeah, I mean, something I had been thinking about a lot leading up to this was just about, you know, kind of like American patriotism. And I had always enjoyed, you know, studying the Revolutionary War period and was so excited about what the Founding Fathers did and all that. And I felt like that had gotten lost for me in the past several years of just being proud of my country and being in that rally and with all those people. It was so much pride in America and what America stands for and the fact that it is the freest country in the world. And I think you're absolutely right. I don't think it has to do with Trump as much as it is just this general movement of being proud of where you come from.
Wow. So then you leave and you see a show and you're like, oh gosh, this is not right. I have to write this thing. And you sit down and write it. And then tell us from that point, after you leave the Trump rally, you go home. Do you feel like you found your people or are you like, wow, this is pretty cool? What are your thoughts?
I don't know that I would say that I found my people at the Trump rally. I think I found my people in the walkaway people. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was just I thought people have to hear a different perspective on this experience. And I had been talking a lot about in just my own private communities about the fact that I thought that Trump was probably going to win and no one believed me and no one wanted to listen to me. And so I thought, you know what? I just need to get this out of my system just one more time to write about why I think that he has this momentous energy behind him that no one is seeing. And this is something that, you know, people don't really hear as much from people who've been Democrats for 20 years. So I just wrote the article. I kind of threw it up and never thought anything would really happen with it because nothing had happened with any of the other things that I had been putting out there for months. So why would it?
My mom sent it to me.
Oh, that's so funny.
My mom said, Tracy, you've got to read this really, really amazing article. And I read it and I was like, oh, I'm in love with her.
Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
My husband went into work the next day and he was starting to get really excited about it. And he told a couple of his friends and they were like, oh, yeah, we've already seen it. It's everywhere.
That's incredible. Wow. That's incredible. Have you... Since the time you posted that and the time that everybody has kind of read it and, you know, the thing that I love about it is that nobody is telling you, you said you're not even sure if you're going to vote for President Trump yet. Fine by me. I just am curious if what you've experienced from both sides, if your personal friends have given you any crap about it, like what's happened?
Oh, dude. I mean, it's been an intense like week and a half, I'll tell you. So from the right, I just like overwhelming like embrace. It almost feels like it was a relief for people to have someone that was not a part of, you know, I'm not a Trump supporter sticking up for them and saying these are not bad people. They were good people. Yes. And so it was like, oh, my God, finally someone said it. And then you said it exactly like people. No one's telling me I have to vote for Trump. They're just saying thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having an open mind about it and for listening to us. Now, on the left, I have become like public enemy number one. It's been an intense amount of hate that has come back on the left to me. And I think that actually just kind of proves the point that they're living in this bubble where they are not capable of having a conversation with each other. And I mean, I've heard from so many people in my that I haven't heard from in years in the last week and a half, but people that I was friends with that that are very liberal, they haven't said two words from me, and they're basically kind of ignoring everything.
It's crazy to me. And I think you've handled it all with a large amount of grace and poise. And, you know, you were even I've read basically everything that you've written in the past. Now, so I've done a lot of research to see, you know, how you're amazingly talented and you're a beautiful person. And I've read your stories and I'm like, how dare these people do this to her? Like, the things they're attacking you about are really just not right. They're not going, it just makes me very angry for you. And I love the way that you're handling it and you're doing such a great job. And, you know, your comments about Glenn Beck made me laugh out loud.
I mean, Glenn Beck, like of all people, like I remember growing up and my father hated Glenn Beck. All I heard was like how evil Glenn Beck was. And so for him to come out and, you know, call me a profile in courage and have me on his show and be so wonderful, I was like, I am living in the upside down right now. What is even going on?
Yeah, no, it's crazy. So what has this affected business at all for you? Or are you still good there?
I think, you know, I'm not actually sure yet how it's going to affect my business. I've definitely gotten actually an influx of people who were like, I read your article. We definitely want to, you know, talk about you coming to work with our team. And that's been really good. I also have clients that have sent me very kind of like side eye notes like, Carlin, what are you doing? I don't think this is a good idea. And so I don't know how it's going to turn out. But I think the reality is that, you know, I'm a fighter, man. And I know how to go out and generate business. So I'm not afraid of that. And the ability to be able to kind of speak my mind much more freely now that I've been kind of, you know, booted out of the closet, as it were. The freedom that I have now, I wouldn't give it up for anything. So maybe my business will take a hit, maybe it won't, but who really cares? These things all work themselves out in the end.
It's called a market correction.
Yes.
Okay, that's what it's called. So you might get a little bit of an influx, but I'm a little bit of a jitter there. But you're exposing yourself up to people who are hungry
yes.
for good times and good feelings. I mean, I hate to say it because 90% of the people in my life are liberal, but there's just so much glum bitterness going on there. And even when they're smiling and having a good time, there's always this sarcasm and this spite to it all. And and it's like dancing on the head of a pin. You just don't know. Anything can set anybody off. And then all of a sudden you get the cold shoulders. And I'm telling you, you're opening yourself up to even greater markets and even more fertile ground.
Yeah.
You know what? I absolutely believe it, because the things I've been teaching for the last several years and even everything that I wrote about in my book, it's all about you make the choice to be happy. You make the choice to make the best of whatever situation you find yourself in. And it's about looking inside yourself rather than looking for other people to do it for you. And that message has fallen like, you know, a ton of bricks on the left where they just don't get it. And I keep trying to tell people, like, you're making yourself stressed out. You're making yourself unhealthy. Why wouldn't you try this other strategy? And so I'm actually really excited to see what happens on the other side.
You're a libertarian because personal responsibility is something that has been like systematically ingrained into a lot of people on the left, that there is no personal responsibility, that if you need something, the government will do it for you. And so they lose that sense of self and individuality. And that's why you hit a wall with that. It has been systematically throughout decades kind of ingrained. Government will help. Government will help. Government will help. Government will help. It's not the case. Personal responsibility is what's going to be your market now. People who we're having quite a good time over here on this side of the fence, even though, you know, we're frustrated about justice and all that stuff. We're loving the economy. We love each other. We're happy and excited for the future. Frank, would you agree?
Oh, well, the loving each other thing, I don't know, too. I mean, everybody has.
we fight, but we love each other for the most part.
We're generally happy because, because you know, everybody's sense of opportunity is not really totally dependent on the community. That's the whole thing there. I think that once it's like when you say distance makes the heart grow fonder. You can tolerate people a lot more if every move they make does not have an impact on your life in some kind of a way. And I just think that that's what it is. The freeing up, when you start freeing up those atoms there. Oh, man. Yeah. No, it's great because you converse with people as individuals and you don't have to actually be a representative of your race. You don't have to be a representative of your sexuality. You don't have to be a representative of one thing or another. And it's just so much easier to interact. So, yeah, there's definitely it's like herding cats at times, as we always say. Nobody can really agree on everything. But it's so much the air is so much lighter.
Absolutely. That's what I'm finding, and I'm enjoying it so far.
So what are your plans now moving forward? What are you going to do? Just take each day as it comes and just write a column for Uncover DC like 100 times? What are you going to do?
I'm going to write many, many columns. But I think, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out. I think there was definitely a brief moment when it first went like really viral where I was like, this was not in my life plan to become a darling of the right and hated by the left overnight.
That's hysterical.
But it's kind of like when something like this happens, I kind of feel like I have no choice but to lean into it. And, you know, I've said this in a few different places, but I really don't feel like this message came from me. I think it came through me from a much smarter, higher power, to be honest. And I think it happened because it was something that so many people needed to hear. And if there was ever a clearer sign from the universe or whatever you believe in to go in a specific direction, I just don't think that exists. I think the other thing. This is where I have to go, and I'll figure it out along the way.
That feeling that you felt inside of yourself, that nagging that wouldn't let you stop, that push that you couldn't ignore, that was whatever, like you said, universe, God, whatever, telling you, you got to do this. You got to do this. Don't. You would have felt sick if you didn't.
Yeah, I think that's very true.
Yeah, I feel you. Definitely. Well, listen, anything you want to add to the audience out here before we leave for the day with you? But this was great.
No, I mean, I guess I'm really excited to get to know everyone on this side. So if they want to connect with me, they can find me on Twitter at Dr. Carlin B or at ZenWorkplace.com.
And you need to come to CPAC.
Hey, if someone gives me a ticket, I will come to CPAC. Absolutely.
I'm going to work on that for you. It's Tuesday. It starts Wednesday.
I can make the trip.
Let's talk offline. We're going to get you down there. Right. We're going to get you down to CPAC.
I would love that. That'd be fantastic.
Awesome. So thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
And there it was, Frank.
What did we tell you?
We're bringing her to CPAC, baby.
What did we tell you?
We're bringing her to CPAC.
Where's CPAC again? Carolinas this year?
No, it's in DC at the Gaylord Convention Center.
Gaylord Perry, yes.
It is so awesome that she's willing to go and she's going to come. It's great. It's great.
Well, you guys are going to have a great time.
Oh, I'm going to. Yep. She's going to really experience it now. She's fantastic. So listen, before I wanted to do a little bit more on the show today, because there was some news that came out yesterday about this whole DNI thing that's going on, Frank, right? So the DNI is in limbo, but it's going to be who? How do you say his name? It's the former ambassador to Germany, Grinnell.
Grinnell.
He's the first openly gay DNI. Not that freaking matters. Well,
unless you were reading about this on The Advocate, they don't even mention it.
Well, it's not important, is it?
They didn't want to bring it. I know it's not important to us, but you know who it is important to, what group it is important to, and they definitely weren't mentioning that when the Senate was holding up his confirmation for months and months.
No, and they did. They did hold up his confirmation for months and months, and finally he was confirmed, and everybody was like, what the heck is going on? Like, why are they holding this guy up? Are they homophobes right now? Yeah.
why would they ever hold, throw a gear into the wrench of, Donald Trump's offer to protect double the amount of people, DACA recipients, than they were asking for a couple of years ago when they were working out the spending bills for the United States government. Why wouldn't they help them out? Are they xenophobes? No, because people are just poker chips.
Yeah,
they don't care. They don't really care. They just want their wedge issues in place at all times.
No matter if the wedge issues will be solved by Orange Man or not, or the issues that lead to the wedge issues, so to speak.
Yeah.
Like if they fix the. If they give them what they want on DACA, they don't have that issue anymore. So they keep the policy that they say they want from moving forward, so that they have something to drive a wedge between them and the person that they are attacking. Sick. Mm-hmm. Sick. So everybody exploded about how it's horrible that he's going to be doing this. He has absolutely no experience. Our country is in danger. Our national security is at risk. You know, James Clapper had 50 years of experience, Frank, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He also had a lot of experience lying to Congress, something I don't think that Richard has.
Listen, I said it last night. Everybody says it's another Trump loyalist. Well, you want to know something? If I were Donald Trump, I would put loyalists everywhere, because I'll tell you this. Grinnell, he has enough from what I'm reading into, especially just being on out there near that intelligence station in Germany, being working in a diplomatic fashion to our largest nuclear ally out there, intelligence sharing. He knows all about intelligence sharing and handling of this kind of sensitive information. And other than that, you have to have a simple internal guide as to what's right and what's wrong here. Other than that, I don't care that he hasn't been in the system for 50 years. That's probably his most endearing quality.
Yeah.
That he's not a company man, because he's not going to go and prioritize the company over the administration and what they want to do and how they want to reform things, because the company has taken on an autonomous life of its own in the however many decades now, and it needs to be pared back and in many cases destroyed. So I'm glad here that there's actually going to be a buffer that's not going to constantly be weighing out its dual allegiances to an autonomous group of spies and the United States.
No, I agree. I agree. And at the same time, Tony Schaefer, who was on Twitter at T Spooky, he stepped forward and said he worked with Clapper. He did black ops with him and he had no idea what he was doing. He was that company man, like you're saying.
Well, we've been able to listen to Clapper in interview form on network television and otherwise for years now, even post Spygate, where everybody was looking at him with even more suspicion. The man's dumb.
Yeah, he is. He's currently in the process of trying to throw Barack Obama under the bus for everything that he did during Spygate.
Yeah, he's a blubbering idiot, to be honest. I mean, come on.
So everybody lost their minds about this. I mean, the tweets that were coming out are utterly insane. And then last night, Maggie Haberman from New York Times said Grinnell is not going to be the permanent ODNI. He's involved in the discussions about who the administration will nominate per two people briefed on his role. That will allow the clock to reset so Grinnell can stay as acting, but only for a short time. And then he retweeted it and said true. So he's acting, right? He's acting. But then we got Natasha Bertrand, the hack from Politico, and Catherine Herridge, the not a hack from CBS, who said that Kash Patel is going to be his top advisor. And angels all over this planet began to sing. Now, do you know who he is, Frank? Because a lot of people don't.
I remember we were talking about him weeks ago, but I'd love to get the skinny again.
He was from from New York. He was an investigator in New York. He ended up with Devin Nunes. He was the brains behind a lot of the work that they did while they were investigating the Spygate scandal.
That's right. Yeah.
He is in Lee Smith's book. He is chronicled throughout the book. He is brilliant. He was attacked incessantly, almost worse in a way than Nunes was because he's not as high profile, right? In quotes. But he knows the system. He knows the injustice. He knows what's going on. He knows the story. And he was, after he left the Hipsy, he went to work inside the White House.
So it should be no surprise to anyone that when Democrats are imploding on a debate stage, or impeachment has not worked, the country is doing well economically, and there are seismic shifts being made behind the scenes in the president's cabinet and the intelligence community and the Department of Justice, we have the New York Times screaming that the intelligence community is reporting the Russians are trying to get Donald Trump reelected again.
Yes, they are. The Russians
on the back of once again anonymous sources.
I think the most telling thing about that article is the fact that they've now given us the proof that all of the Democrat candidates are Russian assets.
Yeah, because nothing has helped the president more than what happened on that debate stage the other night.
This is what I hear every time I watch debates. This is it.
Votes in the Senate in Washington. Let's talk about it.
There you go.
Can I just say something?
In comes Warren at the end of that.
Yeah,
one.
Let's play it. Let's wait.
Can I just defend Senator Klobuchar
from all of these horrible misogynists on the stage?
Can I just be the voice of reason here? I'm just, you know, this is a very spirited debate.
Spirited. It's all very, yeah, it was a very spirited debate the other night. A bunch of loons.
I am so glad they had 33 million people watching.
Well, most of it was us because we knew how bad it was going to be. And we wanted to see and if it wasn't for Bloomberg, nobody would tune in because it would just be, you know, the same clowns minus two or three candidates. But we wanted to see how Bloomberg was going to do. And boy, oh boy. Was that a gang attack? That was.
I was pretty amazed, actually. I really, really was. I was amazed that Bloomberg was attacked by Lester Holt so horribly. But I also was amazed at this. This is something. The first thing I posted was the opening of the debate. Ready?
Bloomberg is pitching. Trump. Senator Sanders, the first question to you. Mayor Bloomberg is pitching himself as a centrist who says he's best positioned to win in November. Why is your revolution a better bet?
In order to beat Donald Trump, we're going to need the largest voter turnout in the history of the United States.
It was so laughable, and they know it, too. Did you hear the supercut? The 2-minute supercut of the media freaking out that they're realizing that the preeminent nominee here is Sanders, and they know that this is the end.
Can you send it to me?
Oh gosh,
I'm going to pause this real quick. All right, so Frank found the clip. We're going to play it right now.
I thought it was a great night for Bernie Sanders. I thought it was a great night for Donald Trump. I thought it was a terrible night for the Democrats.
The truth is Bernie Sanders is on his trajectory to be the Democratic nominee.
To me, I just don't see him having any shot in a general election. I'm panicked. I am absolutely panicked. Well,
no one but Bernie, Stephanie. Come on. He's an anarchist. He would love to burn down the United States.
If we nominate a socialist like Bernie Sanders, we're going to lose. It'll be like George McGovern. It'll be a blowout.
And nobody just says the obvious. Bernie, you're full of it. They're just pandering to the Bernie people. And you know what? Pandering gets you nothing. It certainly doesn't get your respect.
Tom Perez needs to step down. He's a joke. He's a clown. He can't run the Democratic Party anymore. It's lost its way.
I don't see how Democrats do anything but bleed out when they put a socialist at the top of the ticket.
It is a death sentence for the party, and it will lead to Donald Trump's reelection.
The loser, as Leslie put it, are the Democrats.
They've got to get out there and say, I disagree with socialism. I believe in the markets.
Right.
I think he's wrong. I think you'll never get it done. And in this country, we'll never go that direction. And by the way, we'll lose 49 states.
Corbyn didn't work in England. Bernie ain't going to work in the United States. Anyone but Bernie.
That's what I'm saying. And you know, they keep saying the party's lost its way. Well, if you realign the party, all of a sudden you're Republicans again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like the Republicans now are the Democrats in the 90s.
Isn't that scary?
It is. That's what I'm saying. You know, you can't realign, because to realign would mean you'd have to start saying things that Donald Trump is saying. Because
not only that, but you were wrong. You'd have to start saying you were wrong.
Yeah, you have to start saying you were wrong. You're turning around, and then people are going to say, "What? You were wrong? What have I been doing the last 3 years?" Going back to what we were talking about with Carlin, what have I been saying? I've been saying ridiculous things for 3 years because you told me to say them, And this is where we're at. I mean, if you go back to Barack Obama between the years of 2005 and 2008, he talks more harshly about immigration control than Donald Trump does at times.
Mm.
You know, I mean, this isn't even a matter. You say that the 90s were 20 years ago. You don't even have to go back that far. So I'm glad they're getting a panicked look in the mirror, because yes, it is the death of the party. It's necessary. And now we need even more boldness, and we need more articulated stances on why we need to go back and continue to restore what we are here. Because there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with being on the left of things. Just you got to start acting that way locally. That's the only place where it could actually work, be sustainable, and it won't turn into a nightmare on a national level.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. Smart man. It's funny. I posted the burn it all down GIF last night on Catherine Herridge's thing about Patel.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody wrote underneath it, "Oh, Frank will be so proud."
Burn it all down.
You guys have been listening to, oh, let's tell them quickly. Monday, you're not going to be with us.
No, I have to take my mother to some appointments.
Well, I also have some appointments on Monday, so I'm kind of almost pondering. I'll do a show in the morning. It might not be a full hour, but I will do a show on my own. And then I'm off to CPAC, Frank, and Wednesday and Friday's show will be broadcast from Media Row at CPAC 2020.
That is so insane.
It's fine.
I'm going to be jealous, to be honest. I know that I don't ever make an effort to leave New York and do things, or very rarely do. I mean, you've got me to leave New York twice already.
I know.
But I'm going to be a little jealous when I'm sitting here and I can hear you over there and all of the hustle and the bustle.
Yeah,
I'm going to feel like an outside man.
I'm going to bring you in. I'm going to paint the picture for you, Frank.
Good. Great.
So you've been listening to the Dark Delight podcast with,
thank God it's Friday, Val. And
I pictured you with the hat and the monocle.
Oh, yes. There's nothing more regal than a rolled R.
I can't roll my tongue.
No?
No.
Well, you can't learn a Latin language.
I can't whistle either. Yeah, see?
You're not. I mean, you have to learn how to whistle if you're ever going to be a grandfather, I believe.
Well, I'm a woman, so.
You're not. Yeah, you don't have to. But if you're going to be a grandfather, you have to know how to whistle, because that's just what. I love listening to my grandfather whistle, no matter what we were doing in the yard, if he's just driving, if we're walking through a farmer's market or something like that, just whistling.
I'm Beans. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and RadioInfluence.com. I will see you on Monday, and we will see you on Wednesday.
Later.
I'm Jerry P. Tuck, CEO of Radio Influence. I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you for downloading and subscribing to this podcast. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on this program, or you have some show ideas that you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you took time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means a lot. Without you, the listeners, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to this show. Don't forget to check out radioinfluence.com to see what other shows we also have to offer. All of Radio Influence's programming can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.